this computer. So Jack, you mentioned green tea.
Yes.
And I was trying to get an idea of what the scientific basis is of green tea and what the benefits are. And I didn't get very far, but I can assure you that it will show up in a blog post very soon coming.
Okay.
But I also can tell you some small details about green tea, because I found out that green tea is, the concentrate is very different than drinking green tea. So most of my patients, when they tell me or they ask me, can I drink this green tea? They'll have a bottle of Snapple or something like that has green tea in it. That's very little herbal stuff. The way we make tea in this country and the way we drink most of our green tea, and we're talking it to you, Starbucks, is really not very many natural constituents, not compared to green tea extract. So it's entirely possible that green tea extract might have some health benefits, and that might be of use to some people. I was actually shocked that when I started reading the scientific monograph that I was reading, they talk about topical green tea ointments and things like that, which we don't even think about here. We think about, oh, drink green tea, it's healthy for you and all that. And it probably is, but that's probably not all that it does. So,
right.
And I had, if you didn't have any more questions, I did have a, the PowerPoint. I was gonna do a PowerPoint, but I just realized that most of the podcasts, I don't have a PowerPoint, but I could probably, I might be able to figure out how to do that. But I was gonna talk about the other stuff that shows up in prescription medicine besides just the active ingredient. So when your pharmacy switches from one company, let's say Taro, which has a whole catalog of generic products, and they switch to Bar, which is also a very well-regarded and prolific generic manufacturer, that there may be some differences there. And those differences could affect how that drug is absorbed into your body. And if it's absorbed differently, that means that you might not get as much, or in some cases, you might get a little bit more than what you were absorbing when you were taking the prescription branded product, the original product. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about warfarin because that's very common, but there are several other medications that can be affected. Levothyroxine, which is a thyroid supplement, is very sensitive to compounds and constituents in the pill itself. So we can go over that and do that. Or if you have other questions that I can answer tonight, let's do that. So I'll ask you that first. I'm going to do something more on green tea. What else can I answer for you tonight?
Well, the primary question we had was the green tea question about, you know, we'd been reading a number of articles about the benefits to those who've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and was just wondering, instead of drinking tea, green tea, could one just take the, you know, the herbal supplement that you can buy, you know, so many pills per bottle or whatever, but, and just take a quote green tea pill every day, and would that be as beneficial as drinking the green tea?
Or harm you?
Well, that's an interesting question, because there's a lot of foods, garlic in particular, salmon, that are considered healthy. Yet some people feel that, well, instead of eating salmon, why don't I take salmon oil?
Right.
Or, instead of eating garlic, why don't I take garlic pills?
Right, right.
And the challenge with that is that your body has up to 5 to 10 times the amount of the constituents that are normally found in the foods in your body, and now your body has to figure out what to do with them.
Hmm.
So it's on a larger scale, and there have been issues where the kidneys or the liver have been overburdened and actually damaged by ingestion of that. And I think it comes back to the belief that because it's natural, the more the better, because it can't possibly hurt me. And that's really not true, that there is a point beyond which your body can safely continue to detoxify and utilize the ingredients in those botanical and supplemental products. There was one thing that concerned me about green tea, and that was there is a risk of liver damage with green tea extracts. And in fact, the federal government requires that it have a label on it saying, do not take on an empty stomach, take with food, and do not use if you have a liver problem, and discontinue use and consult a healthcare practitioner if you develop symptoms of liver trouble, such as abdominal pain, dark urine, or jaundice, which is yellowing of the skin, the eyes. So they're talking about that although green tea is perfectly safe when you consume it in moderate amounts as a beverage, it can be risky for your liver if you are taking a concentrated version of it, and also taking it on an empty stomach, which evidently improves the bioavailability, which is doctor speak for your body absorbs it better. So you're getting a higher dose.
And it sounds like that might also be true then of the, like a fish oil pill, for example.
I haven't had too much trouble with fish oil, except in very small people taking moderate to high doses and having bleeding.
Oh, okay.
So when I take care of my patients on blood thinners, I usually will say 1 to 2 capsules a day. I've never seen a problem, but on 3 a day, I've seen some bruising and bleeding. And you can't always predict it, because it doesn't change the blood test that you're doing for the warfarin. So you don't get a bump in the INR, which is the lab that they do to test the amount of blood thinner level in your blood. So you don't have the opportunity to go, oh, well, that's a little too high. Let's adjust it down back where it belongs. We don't have that opportunity because it doesn't affect the same exact place, but it does increase the risk of bruising and bleeding. The higher the dose, the more likely that is to happen. Not everybody's going to have that, but that is not an uncommon reaction to high doses. And that's why I don't really like people saying, oh, you know, krill oil, it's even more potent and it should be better for me. I said, not necessarily, because with natural products, there can be too much of a good thing.
So if I've heard correctly, it kind of sounds like with the original question of the green tea, it's maybe better to stick with the beverage, and with the issue surrounding the fish oil, that at least taken in moderation, a supplement might be okay. So then my third question would be about a garlic pill.
And cinnamon.
Oh, and now cinnamon too. Okay. So garlic, oh boy. I was interested in garlic even in pharmacy school. And we had a class that was 2 semesters long, the whole year. And it was called pharmacognosy, which is a fancy word for saying the study of drugs that have been derived from natural sources. And garlic was my term paper. So I wrote a 10-page term paper on garlic. And it's a fascinating family of plants. It has a lot of sulfur derivatives, which gives it its pungent smell. It has vitamin C in it. And it has antibacterial components as well. But when you concentrate it, it doesn't always act as predicted. And thought that garlic would help certain kinds of cardiac risk factors. And they tried garlic pills and garlic concentrate. It didn't really seem to make enough of a difference to make it that you should do the concentrate. Though eating garlic is not a bad choice. So it's interesting that you talk about cinnamon and garlic, and we talk about fish and green tea, which are wonderful additions to someone's diet. But going for the highest concentration to get the most benefit doesn't always pan out. Doesn't always work out that way. Because the more you take, the more your body has to detoxify. And green tea also has caffeine in it. So you have to also consider that if you're going to take a green tea extract, does that mean that the caffeine is concentrated as well? Because caffeine is in low doses is a fairly safe product, but in high doses, there's a lot of heart patients that probably should be using it only in moderation because of its ability to make a heart race and to increase your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about your cinnamon just pouring it on like you do?
Another question is in regards to cinnamon, currently the way that we use that is just, you know, we have a container that we bought and, you know, you just shake it on and add cinnamon to, you know, whatever, you know, like a bowl of cereal or something, as opposed to any kind of a supplement.
Is that okay?
Is that probably the preferred methodology, if you will, is to just to continue to purchase it and add it, and as opposed to taking a pill?
Let me take a look and see what we have here. Cinnamon has been used in Chinese medicine for thousands of years. Okay. 1 to 2 grams daily has been used safely for up to 3 months. Now, how much is 1 to 2 grams daily? That's a great question. I would have to get my little scale out and
but only up start to 3 months.
Powder on there and see how much 1 to 2 grams really looks like. But when you're talking about concentrates and like ground cinnamon in capsules, that would give you an idea of how much we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Another source says that the spice cinnamon, 3 to 6 grams a day has been used safely for up to 6 weeks. So 3 grams a day shouldn't be an issue, but high doses long-term, that some products that include cassia cinnamon also have coumarin, which is not coumadin. It sounds very similar, but it's coumarin, and that can cause liver problems.
And that's why then in both of those different doses, they had a kind of an ending date, if you will. I mean, up to 3 months or 6 weeks or whatever it may be.
Yeah. But people who, again, ascribe to the, if a little bit is good, moderate is better, and a lot is even better. If they have any underlying liver problems, they can get liver damage from large doses, because along with the spicy part is this coumarin, which is a product as well. And again, what our livers can and our bodies can detoxify safely in small doses, in large doses can be significantly dangerous. We know this from Tylenol. Tylenol is a perfect example of low doses being very, very safe, moderate doses being moderately safe in people with healthy livers, but high doses and overdoses are very, very dangerous and potentially fatal. So it's all tied back to the ability of our bodies to safely detoxify it. Because when our bodies are having to detoxify, they use different enzymes and different pathways depending on the shape of the the compounds that are needing detoxification. And many of them create more than one byproduct or final product as such. And if you take large amounts of anything larger than the body is used to dealing with, such as 5 to 10 times the concentration that is normally found in food, then your body has to go, well, you know, I can detoxify half of this, but the rest of it is I'm going to have to do something else. And that's right. The problem with Tylenol is that excess stuff that your body can't handle right away goes down a different pathway, and it ends up being a very, very dangerous compound that will kill a liver cell.
Wow.
So you can get liver damage from Tylenol if you're using too much on a daily basis. So you can have chronic liver damage, or someone who takes a whole bottle, what we call an acute overdose, a whopping overdose, then they can kill their entire liver with the best Tylenol that your body can't safely process. And the overflow that it's not able to safely process gets processed to something very unsafe. So some of these natural products can cause liver problems because the body can only detoxify so much safely, and the rest of it then goes and gets handled differently. And sometimes it gets handled in a way that is potentially dangerous to our organs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's why I like to make sure that the doses, I make sure that when I talk about it on a blog post or in a webinar or something like that, that I mention that these doses have been shown to be safe because they've been studied. But if you're going to do 2 times, 3 times, 5 times that much, you're really you're in uncharted waters.
And
your organs that work so hard to detoxify, and the liver is the primary detoxification organ we have, we can overload it and cause problems.
Okay.
And then there's the other potential, which is not everybody reacts to medicines the same way. Not everybody reacts to food the same ways or spices. And you can develop rash and hypersensitivity, allergic type reactions to things as well. I can tell you that grapefruit, I love grapefruit. I absolutely love it. But I only have like one a week, because if I have more than one grapefruit a week, I get deep, painful sores all through my mouth. So my body can handle a small amount of the constituents in the grapefruit, but not daily. But oranges don't bother me the same way. Lemons, limes don't bother me. Tangerines don't bother me, but something about grapefruit. And many of these fruits have constituents that affect medicine. So grapefruit does affect some medicine as well,
right,
particularly fresh grapefruit, but fresh grapefruit juice also to some degree. But again, it just depends on the person and how much grapefruit they drink or grapefruit ingest. But it's interesting. I have a blog post about grapefruit and the effect on medicine. If you want more detail, you can just go grapefruit search and it will talk about grapefruit and medication. I found that it was really interesting that the way we found out about that effect is they were trying to mask the taste of alcohol. They were trying to do a study that had half the people taking the medicine plus alcohol and the other half were not. And they were trying to find a way to mask when which times or which groups were getting the alcohol when. And they chose grapefruit juice as the way to mask the alcohol they added. So, and then when they did their study, they got very, very different results than they expected. And they were like, oh my word, what could have happened? And then they traced it back to, oh, it must have been the grapefruit. And here we thought that alcohol would be possibly affecting the medicine in the body, how much the body received of the medicine. But no, it turned out to be the grapefruit juice that they used made a difference. So
Yeah, we actually stopped, eating grapefruit or drinking grapefruit juice years ago because of the information we had read about its potential effects on medication. So you won't find a grapefruit or juice in our house.
Yeah, a lot of medicines have that potential, mostly heart type medicines.
Right.
An issue. So, what else did we, I wanted to chat a little bit about what's in your medications, what else is in your medicine. And I'll be doing a short PowerPoint, and I'll try to post that. And I wanted to mention the fact that inactive ingredients, which has a fancy word called excipients, you've got the drug that was developed, let's say a blood pressure medicine, but that's not the only thing that goes into a pill or a capsule or an extract. You've got all this other stuff to make it into a tablet that you can swallow. So much of that can be a dye, a food dye.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a filler to bulk up, or a bulking agent. They call it a bulking agent, because there may be just a few grains of medicine. Well, that doesn't make a pill big enough to handle, pick up, and swallow. I don't know about you, but the smaller a pill is, there's a point beyond which, and I think that size for me is about a baby aspirin size. Below that, it makes it much harder to pick it up and to handle it because it's so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But the filler is to bulk it up so that it can be pressed into a uniform size tablet. And in some cases, the tablet size for all of the doses of a medicine are the same. And in other cases, the lower doses are smaller and they get slightly larger as they go up in size. Then there's the coloring dye.
Mm-hmm.
You may have already noticed that the shape and the color of your heart medicine or your blood pressure medicine may change from time to time as different generic manufacturers choose their colors and their shapes for their version of the brand, the original branded product. Right. Then there's something called a binder, okay? And that's something, and a diluent. So let me back up and say, a diluent is something that allows the color and the stabilizer and the medicine to be blended evenly throughout the powdered stuff. So that when you mix it together, one side of the tablet has the same amount as the other side of the tablet.
Okay? Sure.
And then you've got to press it, okay, together and hold it together so that it doesn't crumble. And this is particularly problematic. I don't know if you've ever tried cutting some of your pills in half. Some of them are hard as rocks that you chop down on it, and one half goes zing across the room. And sometimes the other part of it goes crumble, crumble, crumble. And then you've got crumbs instead of a half of a tablet. And so you want that happy medium in the middle where the tablet is formed. But when you cut it, it's still able to be cut and stay
right
in one place. The binder helps that. It holds the powder together. And one example of this is like if you have super powdery snow and you want to make a snowball, good luck.
Yeah, right.
To allow it to pack down a bit. And that's what a binder does. It allows it to pack down. But when you're manufacturing a tablet, you need that stamp to come down and press it into a tablet, but then to let go when it lifts up. And I use the example of a waffle iron as a you need a lubricant, because when you open it up, you need it to not stick to the sides and rip apart. And that's what we call that, a lubricant. And that needs to be in some formulations as well. And then there's potentially flavorings for chewable tablets or coatings for certain types of tablets, either a film coating or a hard shell, or possibly even a harder shell, which could be an enteric coating. So allow the pill to not be dissolved until it moves out of the stomach and into the small intestine, where it is far less likely to cause stomach upset and nausea.
So okay, that all makes sense.
All of those things go into a tablet of a generic and can be, it's not just one thing, one compound used for a stabilizer or a filler. There's lots of different options for fillers and coloring, different dyes, diluent binders. So your body, oh, and I forgot, a disintegrant. There's another word, fancy word, for something added to a pill to allow water to be brought in, drawn in, sucked in, as you might say, to the center of the tablet so that it dissolves quickly.
Because we'll make some time released.
Yes, she's on or time subject. Release. Mm-hmm. So that time you have the need to make the pill in a way that it either dissolves quickly or dissolves over time in a more controlled way. And all of those go into the formulation of that tablet. And that's part of the reason why enteric coated and timed release medicines are almost always more expensive than plain ones. Mm. And that the generics have a harder time being approved for those than the short acting ones. So,
sure, that makes sense. Okay.
We have a couple minutes left. Are there any other last minute questions that I could address for you, John, Jack?
Do you want to do
that? No, I think that we hog your whole show, so to speak. And I think you've answered all our questions for tonight.
Okay, well, I'll be working on a green tea blog post and look for it in the next couple weeks. And it'll be something that explains green tea, what it's normally used for, and whether you need to take it as an extract or just strong tea, and what it may benefit you and what you have to be watching out for.
Okay.
Garlic cloves or the little jar? Does it matter?
One last question about garlic.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And that is, like, sometimes we'll buy a small jar of minced garlic. Sometimes we'll buy the cloves and cut it up ourselves, etc. Is there any one better than another?
Not that I can tell. I do all three. Also, I have garlic cloves. I have smashed garlic. And I have minced garlic in my refrigerator, and it doesn't seem to be any significant difference between them. Okay. But I will, when I'm looking through the literature, as I look through it, I'll make sure that I note that there's anything that's been noted on that.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're welcome. Garlic is a good thing.
Right.
But more is not necessarily better as far as heart risk. So,
okay.
All righty. Good to see and hear you. And thanks again for joining my podcast this week on Medication Insider.
You betcha. You have a great evening.
You too. Bye, Jack.
Bye-bye.